相信很多观众朋友对流行音乐都非常的熟悉，可是提到古典音乐，很多人脑海中的印象可能是严肃和高不可攀。其实并不是这样，古典音乐和我们的生活很接近，在电影配乐、广播还有咖啡厅里，我们常常能听到这些优美亲切或者是激动人心的旋律。在这一期的时事关心节目中，我们要为大家介绍古典音乐的历史传承和趣闻轶事，当然还要一起欣赏各个时期美好的旋律。让我们出发吧。
公元600年左右，教皇格利果一世将各地教会音乐加以整理汇编及改编，这便是著名的格利果圣歌。格利果圣歌是西方古典音乐的起源，传说是上帝的圣灵给这个教皇以启示来记录圣歌。在很多古典的绘画中，鸽子的形象被用来象征圣灵的降临。
The Psalms are part of the Christian Bible. So reciting the Psalms is something like reading the Bible. And it's an encounter with the Creator, the God who inspired the Bible.
格利果圣歌是崇拜上帝的礼赞，它不注重感官的享受或情感的诉求，而是要表达歌词的宗教内涵。圣歌对中世纪的欧洲人而言，与日常生活息息相关。当时几乎人人都是虔诚地信奉上帝，而礼拜中常用的歌曲都是用格利果圣歌来吟唱，因此一般民众对于圣歌的熟悉程度，就如同今天人们对于流行歌曲的耳熟能详。
In the 10th century, we have very simple harmony. They're like parallel octaves, the same melody sung, at two pitch levels, parallel fifths, and so on. But that gradually does develop and become more complex. And by the 13th century, 14th century, you really have music that's in three or four parts, and the parts are fairly independent and move differently.
到了15、16世纪，欧洲出现了杰出的科学家、艺术家以及文学家，达芬奇、米开朗基罗、但丁、莎士比亚等巨星的降临，造就了文艺复兴时期的繁荣。这个时候，音乐也变得越来越复杂了。
In the 15th century, it shifts from, we no longer consider it medieval music, we consider it Renaissance music. By the generation of Josquin, who died around 1520, the first generation of composers who were born in the 15th century but died in the 16th century, you have music where each part is truly independent. Each part can stand on its own as a melody and yet harmonizes with all the other parts.
这时的音乐和声浑厚，有很强的表现力，多种旋律的交织让曲式更加的活泼精彩。在1600年左右，歌剧这种艺术形式诞生了。它结合音乐、舞蹈、舞台布景和表演艺术，表现圣经故事、古代神话和民间传说。音乐家克劳蒂欧·蒙台威尔蒂于1607年所创作的歌剧《奥菲欧》，是歌剧史上最早的杰作之一。 它改编自希腊悲剧，描述奥菲欧为拯救死去的妻子，不顾一切前往地狱向地狱之王求情的故事。
According to ancient Greek mythology, Orpheus was a great singer, such an effective singer that even animals and trees stopped what they were doing to listen to what he was saying.
Rosa del ciel, vita del mondo, e degna prole di lui che l'universo affrena. Sol che il tutto circondi e il tutto anni, dagli stellanti giri dimmi, vedesti mai di me più liete fortunato amante?
And just as he was about to get married to Eurydice, she was bitten by a snake and died. And Orpheus went down into the underworld, the land of the dead, and persuaded Pluto, the god of the dead, to let her, to let Orpheus bring her back to the world of the living. And he was able to do that because he was such a compelling singer, because he was such a wonderful singer. But there was one condition, which was that Orpheus could not look back as he was leaving. But he was reassured by the fact that he could hear her footsteps behind him. But at one point, he was unable to hear her footsteps, and he looked back. And just in time to see her being pulled back into the underworld.
Eurydice 悲伤地唱出，啊，多么温柔，多么心酸的眼神，然后消失了踪影。精灵们也感叹地合唱出，奥菲欧战胜地狱，却被自己的心所击溃。
There had been earlier presentations, but they're mainly of historical interest as experimental things. But Orfeo in 1607 is Monteverdi's telling of that story. And it's the first really effective opera that you could still perform today and people would enjoy it.
公元1600年到1750年间是西方古典音乐的巴洛克时代。这一百多年的艺术发展相当的奇异和华丽，在这个时代，歌剧获得了很大的发展，古钢琴发明，小提琴、大提琴也被进一步的改进，音乐的和声变得越来越成熟和复杂，而这一时代最广为人知的音乐家就是巴赫。
1685年3月21日，欧洲音乐史上的伟人巴赫出生于德国艾森纳赫市。虽然这是一个小城镇，可他的市民却酷爱音乐。据说该市古代的城门上竟刻着音乐常在我们的市镇中照耀的字样。巴赫家族是地地道道的音乐世家，对于具有极高天赋的小巴赫来说，在这样的家庭成长原是十分幸运的。然而命运之神却偏要找些麻烦，他九岁丧母，十岁丧父，只得靠大哥继续抚养。尽管家里存放着大量音乐资料， 可他的兄长就是不允许他翻阅学习。小巴赫只得趁哥哥深夜熟睡之际，在月光下偷偷地把心爱的曲谱一笔一画地抄下来。可是当他的兄长发现了弟弟的秘密时，却暴跳如雷，不仅无情地没收了小巴赫的全部心血，而且还严厉地惩罚了他。巴赫15岁时只身离家，走上了独立生活的道路。他靠美妙的歌喉与出色的演奏技艺，被努里伯格的圣马克教堂的唱诗班所录取，同时进入神学院学习。为了练琴，巴赫常常彻夜不眠，每逢假日他都要步行数十里去汉堡聆听名家的演奏。他不仅在音乐上努力精进，而且还有着虔诚的宗教情怀。
Many composers have composed music for the Christian church. Bach was one of the few who had a large theological library and really studied the works of Martin Luther and the various Lutheran theologians.
有意思的是，20世纪的一些音乐史学者试图否定巴赫的宗教信仰。
Especially since the places where Bach lived were all in East Germany.Which was communist at the time. So some of the East German musicologists wanted to present him as a forerunner of Marxist revolution and so on, and not as a Christian. But then something very unexpected happened in the 1960s was Bach's Bible was rediscovered.And it was in the library of a Lutheran seminary in the United States. And they had bought it because it had a commentary by a Lutheran theologian that they were interested in. And it had, on the title page, it said J.S. Bach, but everybody said, well, it's not that J.S. Bach. You know, it's a common name. It means John Brook. In English, it would be John Sebastian Brook. You know, so. Somebody went to work on studying the handwriting, and they figured out that it was Johann Sebastian Bach's Bible.
Wow.
And then people started studying the underlining and the comments that Bach wrote in the margins. And from that, it's pretty clear that he was a Christian, and he was making a Christian statement in his music. He was...devout and very learned in Lutheran theology of his time.
巴赫相信人所创造的音乐是献给荣耀的神的和谐之音。他曾说，我的音乐源自于信仰，我深信我的才华是神的恩典，我作曲是为了荣耀神，而不是为了表现自己。纵观巴赫的一生，可以看到，他不仅从未享有富裕舒适的生活，而且从9岁起就因父母相继去世而开始感受到死的阴郁。长大成人，做了父亲之后，又眼睁睁地看着自己13个孩子中8个不幸夭折。可是，他的音乐帮助人类承受了不知多少苦难。给予人类多少福音似的安慰。德国的大文学家歌德这样评论巴赫的音乐，
就如永恒的和谐与自身的对话，我好像没有了耳，没有了眼，没有了其他感官，而且我不需要用它们，内在自有一股律动源源而出。
有意思的是，巴赫的名字在德文中的意思是小溪，但正如贝多芬所说那样，它不是小溪，而是大海。
赫的时代一过，就进入了古典乐派时期。和巴洛克时期的华丽和复杂相比较，古典乐派显得典雅了许多。在这一个时期，最重要的是奏鸣曲式的确立和发扬光大。目前我们最常听到的乐曲形式，不管是独奏奏鸣曲、交响曲，还是室内乐曲、协奏曲等等，都是依循奏鸣曲式来创作的。人们最熟悉的音乐家莫扎特和贝多芬都是这个时期的代表人物。
1756年1月27日，莫扎特出生于奥地利萨尔斯堡的一个宫廷乐师之家。他在世仅35个年头，就像一个灿烂无比的流星，带着神的旨意来到世间传播音乐的精髓，完成使命之后就回归天上了。他名字中的 Amadeus 意思是上帝的宠儿。莫扎特很小就显露出极高的音乐天赋，他3岁开始弹琴，5岁开始作曲，6岁就在父亲的带领下在欧洲巡回演出，8岁时写下了第一部交响乐，11岁便完成了他的第一部歌剧。可以这么说，莫扎特是为音乐而生的。他曾这样描述他的音乐创作：无论多长的作品都在我的脑中完成，我从记忆中取出早已储存好的东西。他的手稿通常干干净净，而不像别的作曲家那样反复修改。莫扎特在35年中留下了625部作品，歌剧是他创作的主流。在交响乐领域，他又以海顿、贝多芬一起为欧洲音乐史写下了最光辉的一页。莫扎特还是钢琴协奏曲的奠基人。另外，他的安魂曲也成为宗教音乐中难能可贵的一部杰作。莫扎特短暂的一生也被贫穷和困苦所缠绕，但是他很爱笑。他那发乎天性的纯真和善意，体现在浑然天成、完美无缺的乐曲当中，总是令人感到幸福、明朗，足以触动每一个在红尘中仍然向往纯净光明的灵魂。曾有人这么说，
在音乐史上有一个光明的时刻，所有的对立者都和解了，所有的紧张都消失了，那光明的使者就是莫扎特。
谈到贝多芬，人们可能首先想起的是他的第5交响曲，也就是命运交响曲。命运交响曲一开头的音乐主题震撼人心，它的第一乐章就建筑在4个音符构成的这个主题之上。它本身无比简练，却充满内在的紧张度，在不断的扩展里发挥出令人震惊的能量，就好像一个苦痛但是坚韧的灵魂与命运的撞击。这首乐曲似乎折射出贝多芬自己曲折的命运和他不愿屈服的心。贝多芬1770年出生于德国波恩， 他既是古典乐派的重要作曲家，也是浪漫乐派的第一人。他一生遭遇许多不幸，而最残酷的莫过于30岁后就为耳疾所苦，耳中充斥着尖锐刺耳的耳鸣声，最后两耳全聋。对于一个音乐家来说，这可能是最惨痛的磨难。在贝多芬中期的作品中，常常能感受到这种苦痛、愤怒和抗争。但是在他生命的晚期，虽然两耳全聋，却再一次创出奇迹。他创作出规模庞大、宏伟壮丽的《庄严弥撒曲》、《第九交响曲》和5部弦乐四重奏。这些作品不追求单纯的旋律优美，然而却思想深邃。他的第九号交响曲是淋漓尽致地歌颂了人类之爱的经典巨作，而且在音乐史上头一次将合唱融入交响乐，器乐与声乐融为一体，显得如此雄浑庄严，充满生机。1979年，贝多芬的第九交响曲被送上宇宙飞船，发射到太空，用它来作为向外星生命展示地球文化的代表作。
18世纪末，法国大革命震撼了整个欧洲，自由、平等、博爱思想的提倡改变了社会，也改变了文化，浪漫主义成为新的一股潮流。这个时期的音乐被人们称作浪漫乐派。
Classical music is more focused on form and abstract musical features, whereas romantic music is more focused on personal emotion and personal experience.
浪漫乐派的音乐家为了能更加淋漓尽致地表现自己的情感，改变了很多旧有的音乐形式和规则，一些新的音乐形式也同时确立起来。标题音乐的确立，交响诗的开创，国民乐派的兴起，再加上乐器更加精良，管弦乐编制一步步扩大，造就了这一个璀璨的时期。在这个时期的音乐家不胜枚举，有小提琴天才帕格尼尼、歌曲之王苏伯特、歌剧作曲家普契尼、钢琴诗人肖邦、开创交响诗的李斯特，还有比才柴可夫斯基、苏曼等等。
Anytime you read about them, you don't just read about the music, you also read about their personalities and their lives.
在这近100年中，无数的作品产生，描绘出纷繁的人间百态。音乐如同这一时代的其他艺术形式一样，从歌颂神变为了表现人。浪漫乐派可能是西方文明中古典音乐的最后一个时期，人类迈入20世纪，西方音乐也进入了现代乐派，这可能是音乐史上最混乱的年代，对个人风格的追求和情感的宣泄渐渐走向极端。近50年来，很多人不再欣赏优美柔和的乐音，而是追求嘈杂喧闹或者奇异古怪的风格，传统的音乐观念被完全打破。
Do you know why people start to compose like that and why people like them?
Well, as I said, a lot of things happened in the 20th century. Jazz is something that happened in the 20th century. And the emergence of rock music is another thing. Rock music often has had this attitude of rebellion. You know, it started out in the 60s, where it was associated with the rebellion against the Vietnam War and so on. You know, and the fact that rock music is often connected with drug use is another thing that is a kind of letting go. Whereas religious music, Christian and Jewish religious music, is usually about self-discipline, you know.
So, but do you think, the classical music, will it get more and more popularity, or it will be less and less people appreciate it?
Well, classical music does require training and education. But without that, it's harder to appreciate. On the other hand, I think in the 20th century, when much of the musical world was dominated by record companies, there was a deliberate attempt to discourage classical music because rock music could make more money.
1990年代，一群西班牙修道院的修道士将他们礼拜时所吟唱的古老的《格里果圣歌》录制成唱片，结果大为流行。很多唱片公司看到商机，也纷纷发行自己的《格里果圣歌》唱片。令人感慨的是，在历经千年的世事变迁之后，还有那么多的人又寻回音乐的本源，在那至简而又至诚的清唱中寻找到心灵的慰藉。也许在每个人的内心深处，都或多或少的有一种返本归真的情节吧。时事关心，我是肖明，感谢您的收看，我们下次再见。